Welcome to Ancient Future Faith with Dr. Chris Alford, pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community in Sacramento. Just what is ancient future Christian faith? Join Chris each week as he talks with special guests about a refreshing renewal in evangelical worship and spirituality that's helping many believers get in touch with their ancient Christian heritage. Now, with another look at how the road to the evangelical future runs through the ancient past, here's Dr. Chris Alford.
Well, greetings, everyone, and Merry Christmas to you. My name is Chris Alford. I'm the host of Ancient Future Faith, heard each week here on KFIA Radio in Sacramento. I'm also the pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community here also in Sacramento. And you're very warmly welcome to this particular edition, Christmas edition of Ancient Future Faith. On the line with me today is a very dear friend and one of my favorite guests on Ancient Future Faith. His name is the very Reverend Dr. Donald P. Richmond. He's a widely published author. He's a priest oblate with the Reformed Episcopal Church and the Order of St. Benedict. And he's connected to St. Andrew's Abbey in Vallermo, California. He's calling in from sunny Southern California today. And Don, it's wonderful to have you back in the Ancient Future Faith studios. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, Chris, and a Merry Christmas to you and your audience.
You know, we're talking about Christmas today, which I thought would be the perfect conversation on this post-Christmas Ancient Future Faith episode. But I suppose we should probably start by saying that though it's a major event in modern America with lots of shopping and lights and caroling and church services and all kinds of stuff, not to mention a federal holiday as well. So it may come as a surprise for some folks that in the early church, Christmas was actually a pretty unimportant holy day, and there were other spiritual observances that eclipsed it. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I'm certainly no expert on the early church and the Christmas holidays, but from the little bit I do know, it was minimally practiced, if at all. We have an entirely different focus that seems, at least from my limited understanding, to come from both a bit of paganism that was baptized by Christians and then reshaped into the best of what a Christian holiday should be.
I was reading some in preparation for today's interview, and I was looking at one particular scholar who says the truth of the matter is the evidence of a celebration of Christmas is pretty late, and he even describes it as somewhat controversial. This is Professor Timothy Gregory of Ohio State University. He was being interviewed by the Christian Post, and he said, to make a complex story short, it's possible that there was some sort of celebration of Christmas as early as the 340s, that's the early 4th century, but it was almost always connected not with the event itself, but with dates for the Annunciation and or the Epiphany. I was talking with Dr. Carl Peters the other day on another edition of Ancient Future Faith, and we were talking about the wonderful way that evangelicals are recovering Advent and a true Christmas observance and also Epiphany. And I'm going to bet that there's some things about that that really please you as well. And to hear this particular author talk about how Epiphany was a bigger deal in the early church than it is in some ways now triggered my memory about that. Tell us a little bit about Epiphany, and why do you think it might have been a bigger deal in the early church than Christmas itself?
What is the Epiphany? It is the revelation of Jesus Christ, and often within the church, we associate Epiphany with the baptism of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, as all evangelicals think, Jesus is revealed in a number of ways, and certainly the Christmas holidays, when properly recognized and properly celebrated, certainly reveals Christ uniquely. And of course, in our culture today, these things are under attack, and there is a militant atheism that is trying to undermine the good that these holidays can bring to our society. As for Epiphany itself, it's an unusual holiday for me in that I recognize it as a part of the church calendar. I have preached on that particular topic, but I don't always understand the direct connection between the two, except by the fact that there is a calendar of the church year by which we systematically celebrate various aspects of the life of Christ, and this is one of them.
My understanding that the earliest real evidence for Christmas, or perhaps better said, an epiphany, comes from the Alexandrian writer Clement, who, roughly around the year 200, reported calculations of the chronology of Jesus' birth. There was some interest in the early church about trying to fix a date for Jesus' birth. One of my favorite church fathers, Chrysostom, who is an early 5th century bishop, was also very much interested in this. But it's fascinating, isn't it, that the biblical writers themselves show very little interest in trying to nail that down. And then when you look at Mark's gospel, for example, he says the beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ and goes straight away to the desert and to the scene where John the Baptist is baptizing Jesus.
It is interesting, and I like the play of words in Mark's gospel, where in Mark, I believe it says Jesus was driven into the wilderness, and of course the connection is being made between the sacrifice in the Old Testament, the sacrificial lamb being driven into the wilderness, being separated from the people for the salvation, so to speak, of the people. And then in, I believe it's Matthew's gospel, Jesus is led into the wilderness.
Sure.
And I find that to be an interesting use of words, and I think we can be enriched by meditating on why those two texts are so different and what they mean specifically for our lives.
As I understand it, the early church observed in Epiphany, again, not quite so much to have been a Christmas kind of observance in the way that we would think of it, but more of a thematic celebration of Jesus' appearance and also his sonship, emphasizing not so much human birth as the beginning of his ministry and baptism. And that's where we get all of that emphasis, particularly in Mark's gospel, about his divine sonship. And I think that, at least for me and my church, we try very hard to emphasize those kinds of things in Epiphany. Perhaps the biggest epiphany of all, the biggest revelation, is that God became enfleshed. Jesus is the only begotten Son, together with the Father from the beginning, and he comes to be revealed. The epiphany is that the revelation is not just to the Jew, but for the Gentile as well.
Correct, according to the Apostle Paul. And that really, when we come to the issue of Christmas and the fathers of the church, that specifically is what really excites me, because as you well know, and probably better than I know, the early church fathers saw it as their apologetical task to define very clearly and defend who Jesus was.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus is God in the flesh, fully God and fully man. Gregory of Nazianzen said this, "Spirit gave divinity, and flesh received it." And what we have in the incarnation of Jesus, in this particular revelation of the Christ, is the sanctification of the material.
Mm.
And that is a wonderful thing, because what are Christians and much of humanity often racked about if they have any interest in holiness? They're racked over, how does this flesh fit into living a holy, spiritual life? And by Jesus, God in the flesh, becoming flesh, it sanctifies the flesh and gives a new perspective on what specifically holiness looks like.
As you're talking, Don, about those important essentials of the faith, I'm reminded that it is also in these first few hundred years of the church that the church fathers are putting out fires, if I can use that term, as fast as they can go, and trying to knock down these pernicious heresies. And maybe there's one reason that they weren't so much fixated on Jesus' first coming as they were, in some ways, on his second. For the early church, there was a much greater focus put on Easter, and then just every Lord's Day, for that matter, because they were, in some ways, so much more focused on the parousia, the imminent coming, the second coming, rather than the first. Does that ring true with you?
It does, and I think that because of that, in some ways, dogma, particularly Christological dogma, took time to develop. It's not that the Bible did not contain these truths.
Right.
But because most of the church, if not all of the church, believed that Jesus would show up quite literally at any moment,
imminent,
they did not devote a lot of time to that. But if we return, if I may, to this whole concept of the sanctification of the flesh,
mm-hmm.
and then we recontextualize that to our contemporary situation, we can begin to see why the world is attacking the church, particularly in its celebration of certain holidays, Christmas being specifically the holiday they take a lot of time to attack.
Mm.
And the reason is, I believe, it's just a new form of heathenism or paganism. It is an attack, again, on the flesh. Let me put it in this context. It's okay for Christians to personally hold opinions and privately to exercise their faith. But when we, as Christians, begin, so to speak, to enflesh that, to put Christ back into the holiday, to insist that Christ is the center of Christmas, then we have militant atheism taking its exception to
yeah.
it. And not even a militant atheism, just many people today who are average citizens of these United States are resisting it and saying, oh, it's a personal matter and that's okay, but you can't express this in the public square. Well, that's a denial of the enfleshment of Christ. And that's what the early church was attacking, and I believe that is what we as Christians in a proper form need to resist as well.
You're listening to an interview with the very Reverend Dr. Donald Richman. He's a dear friend of mine and a frequent guest of Ancient Future Faith here on KFIA Radio. We're talking about Christmas and Christmas in the early church, and well, the fact of the matter is there was not a very big emphasis on Christmas in the early church. Much more interested the early church was in the imminent second coming of Christ, and also, as I pointed out a minute ago, very much interested in trying to put out the heretical fires that were springing up all over the place around them. And one of the biggest fires of all, one of the biggest heresies, was this notion that somehow Jesus was not really flesh. Or maybe he was completely flesh and not at all God. Or perhaps he was completely all God and not flesh at all. And so it is this enfleshment that, Don, you're focusing on right now, which I guess leads me to another question that I wanted to ask you. As we think about ways that Christians can really recover a truly Christian Christmas, maybe one of them is a fresh focus on the enfleshment of God. I love that quote that you mentioned a minute ago. Can you give us that one more time?
Yes, Spirit gave divinity, flesh received it. And I think probably a modern poet and author who you'd be familiar with who said it in different words is Charles Williams, of course, one of the Inklings.
Yes.
Charles Williams said, "Flesh speaks as Spirit speaks, but Spirit knows of what it speaks." And I think that's just a rephrasing of Gregory's 4th century words.
So the early church was absolutely captivated with this notion of how much God is Jesus, or how much man is Jesus. And so perhaps returning to some of those basic orthodox essentials of the faith and really immersing ourselves in them, particularly this time of year, is a way to recover, wouldn't you think, a truly Christian celebration of Christmas.
Absolutely. I think we need to ask ourselves at any time, but especially during seasonal times, how can I, as a believer in Jesus Christ, live out my faith in practical ways before the world? And I think that is the task of apologetics. And one of the things that I like to say is that the proof of our faith is in proclamation, and the defense of our faith is in declaration. And when we do that, both in our lips and in our lives, the task of apologetics falls aside. That is, the intellectual task of apologetics is set aside for the enfleshment of that task, and that's really what convicts and converts and convinces people.
So can you give us some examples of that, that we might think about this Christmas season? What is the difference between proclamation and declaration, and how can we inculcate that into the way we live our lives as Christians this holy season?
Well, I think proclamation and declaration are very similar. It's when we move towards proof and unwholesome defense that we get ourselves into problems. One of the ways we can effectively proclaim the faith is by asking ourselves the question, what did Joseph and Mary and Jesus do on that very first Christmas? Well, they lived in poverty.
Mm.
Well, how are we helping the poor, the marginalized, the oppressed? How are we doing that in our day-to-day life? And I think one example of this is Pope Francis I. What did he do throughout his ministry? He lived among the poor,
yes,
the marginalized, and the oppressed. And what makes him such a marvel today is that we have a pope who actually lives the gospel and doesn't just talk about it. And so one of the ways we can proclaim is by actually doing for the poor what they cannot do for themselves, or providing opportunities for the poor whereby they can do for themselves. So that, I think, is one way. And one of the things that we get caught up on, particularly at the Christmas season, is we take a lot of time criticizing those who are criticizing our Christmas holiday.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that. If we spent as much time caring for the poor, or
correct,
living out our Christian witness as we do fussing about some sort of marketing ploy at Target, or arguing with people about how Christmas is under attack, boy, wouldn't the gospel and wouldn't the kingdom be expanded wonderfully well?
It would be far more effective to do that. And it's not that we don't have a responsibility to, in some ways and in a proper way, verbalize that faith and defend certain things.
Well, of course.
But more often than not, if we were to live what the gospel looked like in practical terms, that would be far more effective. What are we doing in regards to the rampant consumerism that is dominating our culture?
Yes.
As I walk around today, I see thousands of people in a variety of stores busy trying to buy a whole host of presents, but you won't find hardly a Christmas decoration anywhere in the city that I live.
Wow.
And in the surrounding three other cities near where I live, and I've driven around them, there is hardly any marketing that would say it's Christmas. So people are busy buying, but they have absolutely no idea why they're buying. And if they do, it's a casual nod to the guy upstairs whose son is called Jesus, and they rush on. What would the message be to the world if Christians sort of backed away from that entire consumer mentality?
I'm with you.
And said, we're not participating in that. This is how we're celebrating Christmas. It will be in simplicity. It will be in fellowship with the church. It will be in communion with those who are needy, and in worshiping God, who is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. We will incarnate it in our daily lives.
Oh, that's beautifully said. That same article I was talking about earlier said something to the effect of, nowhere is there precedent for celebrating Christmas in the gospel, certainly, and even in the early church, and frankly, even comparing it to the medieval church, which began to celebrate something that we would more likely begin to call Christmas. But there's no tradition, even early on, of gift giving, and certainly not the materialism of it.
And I think for us as well, this focus upon God becoming a human being, if we were to capitalize on that, to celebrate what Madeleine L'Engle calls the glorious impossibilities, and one of the glorious impossibilities is that God should become a human being, to believe in the impossible. If we were to focus on that, we would have far more hope and far more gladness, and maybe far more poverty of spirit and thoughts directed towards God. And by the way, those last four statements I'm in fact stealing from Hilary of Poitiers.
Mm.
But because we're so caught up in what can be and busy with things that are empty of the holy, we don't celebrate the glorious impossible anymore.
We're talking today with the very Reverend Dr. Donald Richman. He's a dear friend of this program, and we're talking about Christmas celebrations, which you're going to have to look really hard to find in the early church, because they certainly don't bear any resemblance to what we have today. When you move forward into the medieval period, the Middle Ages, there was a celebration of Christmas, but it bears very little in common with the way we do it, at least in North America. And there is one particular angle about a Christmas celebration, though, Don, that I'd like us to touch on before we sign off, and that is there is a tradition in the church that Christmas is more than just one day. And that, I think, is something worth thinking about and recovering. You were just speaking a minute ago about these glorious impossibilities. The very idea that God would become enfleshed is worth a celebration of more than one day. It's so much bigger than Christmas trees and lights and a ham or turkey dinner. It's worth a celebration and worth a 12-day celebration. And when I speak to evangelicals about recovering a Christian Christmas, I try to remind them that Christmas is more than just a one-day event. And you've given us some things to think about in this season of Christmastide. You're talking about paying attention to the poor and maybe pushing back against the materialism of it all. Can you think of some other things that we might do to fill up 12 days of glorious celebration about the fact that God became flesh?
I tend to be more philosophical than practical. My wife says I'm a wonderful preacher, but I need to be more practical. Let me stretch it a little bit farther. I think there are more than 12 days of Christmas.
Okay.
There are 365 days of Christmas.
Oh, I love it.
And every season of the church year is a Christmas season. We cannot escape it.
Right.
And so I think for practical reasons, one of the things we can do to make Christmas more of a reality, although it doesn't sound very Christmassy, is what I do. When I wake up in the morning, I turn to the side of my bed, I plant my feet squarely on the ground, and I say this: Blessed be God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and blessed be His kingdom, now and forever. Well, how's that Christmassy? Without God coming in the flesh, I could not say that.
Wow. Yes.
And while it is the beginning of an Anglican Eucharistic service, there is no Eucharist without the Incarnation.
That's right.
There is no resurrection without the Incarnation. There is no transfiguration without the Incarnation. And I would go so far as to say that every heresy that has ever existed is a neglect of the Incarnation.
Oh, yeah.
So
well said.
Any way that we can incarnate on a daily basis, or at least acknowledge verbally that God has become a human being, is a way to celebrate Christmas.
That's beautifully said. The Incarnation has everyday implications, yes?
Absolutely.
Well, I want to wish you a very Merry Christmas, Don. It's always a pleasure, and I hope you have a very, very Merry Christmas.
And same to you and your audience, Chris. God bless.
Folks, you've been listening to another edition of Ancient Future Faith. My name is Chris Alford. I'm the host and also the pastor of Epiclesis, an Ancient Future Faith community here in Sacramento. Now, until we gather for another edition of Ancient Future Faith, I want you to be remembering this. Surely the road to our evangelical future runs through our ancient Christian past. And a very Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you for joining us for another look at Ancient Future Faith. There is a refreshing wind of renewal blowing through the evangelical church as more and more worshipers turn for inspiration to the rich language and pattern of the ancient church, and they're rediscovering classic Christianity and learning to draw strength from a deep well of time-tested truth and tradition. Want to experience Ancient Future Faith for yourself? Join us for worship at Epiclesis in Sacramento on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. in the chapel at 4600 Winding Way. You can contact us by calling 916-572-9113 or online at epiclesis.org. That's 916-572-9113 or on the web at epiclesis.org.
Hey folks, hold on a minute before you go. Christmas is all over, right? So what happens next? Well, one ancient future thing about Christmas is that it's not just a one-day event, but rather a celebration that lasts 12 days. I'm hoping you'll join us for worship during Christmas and then on into the season of Epiphany. What in the world is Epiphany and why should evangelicals care? Come worship with us and find out. And you can get more details on the web at epiclesis.org. That's epiclesis.org. The Lord be with you and see you next Saturday at 1 p.m. for another edition of Ancient Future Faith.